Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us for Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender in for Neil Stavem this week, and glad to have you here today. You know, this is the time of year sometimes when I want to just turn off the TV because I've had enough of the political banter, even though I consider myself kind of a news junkie. Even I get tired at this point in time of the negativity that seems to be spewing all over the airways.
So I shouldn't say things like, Joe Bender comes in for Neil Stavem at noon.
No.
It's like that tone is everywhere, isn't it?
It is. It's everywhere. Opinions are flying, and it seems like all we hear are negative stories in the news. And so I was kind of pleased to just be perusing through Facebook and listening to some alternative news outlets and find some good stories as well. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that today, because last week, if any of you remember, we of course had the story of the Florida State University football player who made the day of a middle schooler at a school nearby, because this middle schooler was by himself. And this football player had lunch with him. Very simple little thing to do.
He was having lunch just by himself at the end of a table, and there's a big gap between him and the next student even. And this well-known football player decides to, I'm just going to sit down and have lunch with him. His name is Travis Rudolph, a wide receiver for the Florida State University. Just started talking to him, and he asked if he could sit down. The kid said, sure, why not? They struck up a great conversation, and then his mom saw that photo and just burst into tears.
Of course, and she posted it on Facebook, and all of a sudden we had a really good story to think about throughout the week. And what a big difference such a small act of kindness can make. I also noticed as I was watching football with my kids this weekend, the New Orleans team made a great just movement toward peace and solidarity by not only standing for the national anthem, but holding hands as well.
Yeah, they're playing the Falcons, a big division rival and everything. But yeah, during the national anthem, or I think maybe right after, they went out and encircled the center of the field and held hands, made a circle just as a visual show of unity and reconciliation.
Again, kind of a small thing, and didn't get a lot of attention through the media, but it made a big statement, not only for those of us watching, but for my kids especially, because you think about all these athletic competitions and you think, you know, we need to beat the other team down. And here this was just a showing to say, hey, we're going to make a statement and we hope everyone's watching. So that was a really great thing for me to see, for my kids to see as well. Athletes just making a bit of a difference with just a very small act of kindness. You know, John Stone Street also points out that doing good, it changes the person who does the good from the inside out as well.
Doing good changes you. Just ask a middle schooler. For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. The football team of Michigan's Olivet Middle School drew up a special play. They told no one, not even their coaches, but they pulled it off. The running back broke free from the 15, headed for the goal line, only to drop to his knee on the one-yard line. The fans were stunned. Why did he stop? Well, onto the field came Keith Orr. As CBS News reporter Steve Hartman said, Keith is learning disabled. He struggles with boundaries, but in the sweetest way because of his special nature, meaning he likes to hug. Well, on the next play, the quarterback gave the ball to Keith. Several players surrounded him and escorted him into the end zone for a touchdown. The play made Keith's day, his week, maybe even his year, but his teammates were the ones who learned the life lesson. I kind of went from being someone who cared mostly about myself and my friends, said the wide receiver through tears, to caring about everyone and about everyone's day and everyone's life. That's a bigger lesson than football. With today's point, I'm John Stone Street.
You know, as parents, it really warms our heart to be able to see our children succeed, or to see our children do something good that changes them. So I love stories like that. I hope we can see more of them even in this next month as we hear more about the political culture of our nation than we probably are going to be able to hear about our kids. You know, we as parents would go to the ends of the earth for our children, but many of us thankfully do not often have to do so. My guest for today has spent a lot of time at the proverbial end of the earth, though, with her daughter, who struggled for years with addiction and depression and mental illness. Let me tell you a little bit about her, and we will get her on the show. Dina Yoy has been a social worker, a pastor's wife, and a crew staff member. She's the mother of a formerly troubled daughter, Renee Yoy, Rene was suicidal, addicted, depressed, self-harming, whose situation led friends to start the well-known nonprofit To Write Love on Her Arms. Renee's life was also portrayed in the 2015 Sony Pictures release by the same name. Dina is an avid blogger. She and her husband Tom have three grown children, and they love being grandparents as well. They live in sunny Orlando, Florida. Welcome, Dina.
Thank you, Joe. It's good to be with you today.
Well, it's great to have you here, and I'm sure as you were listening to those stories of kids doing good, you can't help but think of your own three children as well, right?
Yes, yes.
It does seem to change kids from the inside out to do things good, but it seems like it also changes parents from the inside out when their children are not doing as well. Can you kind of set us up a little bit of your backstory and Renee's backstory of why you came to write your wonderful book called You Are Not Alone, Hope for the Hurting Parents of Troubled Kids?
Yes, well, it was largely because when we were going through our most difficult days, not knowing if our daughter was dead or alive, wondering if we could even survive what we were going through ourselves, we began to meet more and more parents, just like us, that had no one to talk to, no support, and alone on this journey is just so much harder. And I just felt compelled that I needed to write about what I'd learned and where I found help, because that way I could help even more parents than I could speak to myself one-on-one. So it's really out of a desire to try and encourage more people by the way I had been encouraged.
Well, and you write about the fact that you were on this journey, you felt like you were all by yourself, and you wondered if there was something that you had done or not done. And that was a difficult journey for you as well, since you have three children, and only one of them was really struggling with some issues of being addicted, depressed, and suicidal as well. How did you get through that journey, and what was your faith? How was your faith tested through that?
Yes, well, we laugh now and say, gee, if we just had one kid, we would have thought we could have written a book on how to get the perfect child. And then we discovered we really didn't know anything at all. So it's been a very humbling process. Guilt and shame are huge problems, especially in the Christian community or if you're in any kind of leadership position in ministry, because you feel like, gee, I'm supposed to know how to do all this right and just do these certain things, and I'm supposed to get a certain outcome, and what does it really mean? How do I answer that question as to why this happened? It really helps so much to just begin to talk about it, and then I began to meet more and more people who were going through something similar that I had no idea there were so many others out there. And finding support groups was huge, because that was where I learned a lot of the principles and things that I needed to know that would help me process the guilt and the shame and all of the other things that I was trying to cope with. Because when you don't know what tomorrow holds and you think you're the only one, you just want to hide and keep it to yourself so no one will think less of you or of your child. But my faith was a huge central piece. I would think I'd be the one in the psychiatric hospital today otherwise, only by God encouraging me every step of the way and encouraging me with the fact that He understood and that He would always be with me every step of the way, no matter what happened. Those were some of the things that helped me survive and just hold together.
Well, tell us a little bit about Renee. How was her childhood, and when did things start going a bit sour?
Mm-hmm. Renee was a mixture. She was a delightful child with lots of wonderful interests and abilities and talents, but she also was a very challenging child, strong-willed and I used to say stubborn. Well, what I discovered in her early teens was that she actually had a sensory processing disorder, meaning that she was sensitive to all of her external environment, touch, taste, sound, and we had no idea. And this all, these all played into why she was often irritable and moody and so on, and played into probably her harming herself the first time when she was 12 and was in trouble for something and was very upset with herself, upset with me, and got this idea out of nowhere to cut herself. This was 16 years ago, and I had never heard about it before. I had no idea what it was. One thing led to another, and in time, she did begin to self-medicate with drugs and alcohol, and that journey took her to rehab the first time shortly after graduating from high school. So it was something we never expected, ever. No parent does. As a young girl, being so good at sports and enjoying a lot of things like that that she excelled in, we only saw her as a young person who was going to succeed and do well in her life. So these things came as quite a surprise and so unexpected to us.
So a lot of kids, you had written about a lot of kids kind of feel that pressure to perform well for their parents, and that sometimes that contributes to this downslide of really not feeling well about themselves. Were you able to talk with her about this? Was that something that she brought to your attention?
Oh, in her anger, maybe. But sadly, we weren't really able to talk about it. Communication kind of broke down as we would just be so upset with each other. Later on, we came to understand this. And, of course, now, in retrospect, we always understand much more our high expectations. Yes, and how she always felt that she couldn't be good enough. Her brother was perfect. She felt like she could never be perfect. Of course, he wasn't perfect, but in her eyes, he was. That was something that she did struggle with, but she wasn't able to talk about it, and we didn't even know to ask that question at the time. Mm. We've grown a lot and learned so much about ourselves on this journey, which was something that's a plus, actually, that comes out of these kinds of trials.
Well, we're going to hear more from Dina about her story and more about Renee's story as well. The support system that Dina was able to grab from others who had been in the same situation, and how she reached out to others who didn't know about her quite yet. We're going to talk more about with Dina Yeo about You're Not Alone, her book on hope for the hurting parents of troubled kids, coming up on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us today. I'm talking to Dina Yeo today. She's been a social worker and a pastor's wife, a crew staff member as well. She's the mother of a formerly troubled daughter, Renee Yeo. Renee was suicidal, addicted, depressed, and self-harming, whose situation led friends to start the well-known nonprofit to write Love on Her Arms. We'll hear more about that from Dina in her book, You Are Not Alone. Dina, one of the things I loved about your book is that you wrote your own story, but you also had Renee supplement that story with how she was feeling about those same exact things. And one of the things you wrote so eloquently was about this need to get a diagnosis if possible. And she also supported that with how knowing her diagnosis changed her as well. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, it was very hard to admit that there might be a problem. I'll never forget when we finally did take her to a counselor because things had become so bad. And then the counselor said, I think she really could use a psychiatric evaluation. And my first thought was, what? My child needs to see a psychiatrist? I mean, I just couldn't believe it. It was something that just seemed so far outside of anything I knew. But yes, it was so helpful to just begin to understand what we were dealing with, and that process of beginning to educate ourselves and get more information helped us to not be so afraid. I mean, we still were about what could happen, but it lowered that. It helped us be more empathetic and to try and have more realistic expectations. It's a hard thing to do, that first step, just admitting that there might be a problem. But, yes, my daughter says that's one of the things she wished we would have done sooner when she first cut herself, was to take her to a counselor and at least give her the opportunity to talk to someone.
And was she able then to understand herself a little bit more, and did that help? Did that assist her a bit, or was there still so much work to do?
All of the above. she was just 17 when she went the first time. I think she was initially eager to learn more and had a huge sigh of relief that, oh, there's an explanation. There's a reason. This isn't normal, whatever that is. But then she wasn't ready to, take it too seriously and do the work. That turned out to be a very long process of kind of starting, stopping. Today she's 29, and she fully embraces her recovery and a lot of the hard work she has done over the years. But it's been tough, and they're all not ready at the same age to do that, because it does take a lot of hard work and effort and willingness to look at yourself, and that's not easy even for us grown-ups.
Mm. Well, and you write a lot about that, about just it being difficult to control kind of how you're feeling toward her either doing or not doing the hard work. And you even write a little bit about anger, little bursts of anger that are difficult to control sometimes when their behavior is not what you know it could be. Talk about that a little bit and just how that affected your relationship.
Oh, yeah, it was huge. I'm a pretty laid-back person, but it seems like when we have a challenging child, they know all of our hot buttons. Mm-hmm. They just are able to push us right up to the edge, and, it's so hard to control ourselves and not let our temper get the best of us and not to say something that we would regret. But I would often hold it in, and, of course, that was really unhealthy. One of the things that helped me as the years went by, and I was struggling so much with anger and disappointment, was an exercise a counselor shared with me that he just simply called the chair exercise, and I describe it in greater detail in the back of my book if someone wants to try it. And basically, it's just sitting down, giving yourself that space and time in a prayerful attitude that you just pour out everything you want to say to God. Just let it rip, no bars hold. And then when you're done, you've got it all out, you just ask him what he wants to say back to you. And that was powerful for me. But even, like, just finding healthy ways to get the anger out, write it. If you're an artist, paint it, draw it, create it. I also wrote a letter to my daughter, and I would just say everything I wanted to say and all the bad words and everything I wouldn't ever say out loud, and then just destroyed it and ripped it up, and that felt very good. So that has been a journey for me, too, just learning to cope with my anger and face it and find healthy ways to release it. And then it was okay not to be okay.
Well, I loved that chair exercise. And I was just imagining you sitting there and being able to pour out your heart. And you talked about how the Psalms do that anyway. And sometimes we're so afraid to speak to God the way that we're thinking in our mind. And yet you did that, and it was somewhat healing for you, was it not?
Yes, I thought, ooh, it's not okay to be mad at God, is it? Gee, isn't that wrong? And then the quick thought comes, oh, wait a minute, he knows everything I'm thinking and feeling anyway, and he's not going to be offended, he can take it. Yes, it was so freeing to just relax and say, okay, I can tell him everything. I can be completely honest, and it's all right. Because holding it in just turned into depression. It hurts us even more.
Well, in fact, that's one of the things you talk about is that saying you're not alone so that other parents will know that there are other people in this same situation, that you're not the only one, and that you have people that you can talk to. How were you able to find others who were in or had been in the same situation?
Yeah, well, that was hard. It took a while because being a missionary on staff with Campus Crusade, I didn't know anyone who had a child going through anything like what I was. So I didn't have any friends I could talk to. I didn't want them to know. Actually, I went to a conference for other hurting parents. I heard about that and went, and that was fantastic, being with other people going through something similar and learning from them, just the fellowship that we had, the strength that we found from one another. And then through them, I found other places like Al-Anon and Celebrate Recovery that had support groups for parents. Those were huge because I realized that, gosh, isolating and withdrawing and holding it in and staying alone, that was hurting me so much. And I was denying myself from being able to receive the support and the help that God wanted to offer me. Yes, he was helping me one-on-one, but that he wanted to come around me with other people and the body of Christ, and I was denying myself that comfort.
And how about your relationship with your husband through this as well? Was that did you cling to each other more? Did you tend to separate a little bit more? Did you deal with losing your child and then gaining your child back all at the same time? Did you deal with that together, or did you find you had different ways of coping?
Well, we certainly had different ways of coping. Men and women were so different. We react and respond differently, and then different personality types. So there was a lot of tension, but fortunately, we really pulled together and became stronger. But we certainly had a lot of difficult times where I didn't understand why he didn't feel like I did, and he didn't understand me, and it was difficult to agree, especially when she was in our home, how we were going to respond to things. But we learned early on by going to these support groups that we needed to be united. We had to be on the same page, or your child always knows who's the weaker parent, who can they kind of work, and they go to that one, and that just pits you against one another. So we were fortunate in learning that we better take care of and protect and guard our marriage, because one day she would be on her own. She wouldn't always be with us, and there would still be us, and we better take care of us or there wouldn't be anything left. So one of the things we did that we encourage other parents to do is to make time for each other. If you can, every week, maybe every other week, that you go on a date and that you declare it a no prodigal zone. You're not going to talk about that child. You're going to just focus on other things. It's hard, but it really was a big help to us.
Dina, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back on Connecting Faith with Dina Yoy on You Are Not Alone. Welcome back. I'm Joe Bender. We're talking to Dina Yoy today about her book, You Are Not Alone. Dina is the mother of a formerly troubled daughter, Renee Yoy. Renee was suicidal and depressed. She was a self-harming girl whose situation led friends to start a well-known nonprofit. We'll talk a little bit about that. That nonprofit is called To Write Love on Her Arms. We do have a few copies of Dina's book to give away, You Are Not Alone, Hope for the Hurting Parent of Troubled Kids. You can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Maybe you know someone who is feeling alone, who may have a troubled child, and someone who just could use a little extra help and support as well. We'd love for you to get that book in their hands. 877-933-2484. Dina, one of the things you write so well about is just how you dealt with your own guilt and maybe even some shame, feeling so powerless with what was going on with Renee. How did you deal with that, and how can you offer hope to someone who might be in the same situation?
One of the things that helped me the most was to realize that God was the perfect parent. All the way back in the very beginning of the Bible in Genesis, we read the story about his first two children, Adam and Eve. And we remember, okay, they had a perfect environment. They didn't even have any temptations around them other than that tree. But did God make any mistakes? No. Did he do anything wrong? No. And yet we think we deserve better than God, who couldn't even keep his own first two children from rebelling. Just that perspective was a huge, just took a weight right off my shoulders. So I really love to share that with parents and encourage them to reject that guilt and that shame, because that is not from God.
And were you able to find people and surround yourself with people who also had maybe already walked through that to kind of lead you on that journey?
Yes, I gradually met others who were several steps ahead of me, who were sharing things with me that, huge eye-openers, like, oh my goodness, really? Wow, I needed to hear that. So yes, and just finding books and reading, devouring everything I could get my hands on written by other people that would help me understand a little bit more of what to expect and how to cope, because we don't know. There's no book that God hands down of how to handle this kind of thing.
Well, I was so heartbroken as I read through your story, and it seemed like you had so many years of living in this just feeling of fear or powerlessness, not knowing when that phone call might come. In fact, I'm reading a section of your book. It says, "We were aware of having no control. We knew that any day we would receive a phone call telling us what we never wanted to hear. We needed help to survive, but we didn't know where to turn. And slowly we began to reach out. And when we did, little by little, we did find help. Our own healing gradually came." And so this, yeah, just this feeling of not really knowing what to expect from day to day, how were you most able to work through that?
Well, yes, it was horrible for any parent not knowing if their child's going to survive is their worst nightmare. And what is the surprising thing is that when I was able to begin to face my fears, face my worst fears, which of course the worst was that she would die, it stripped them of their power and it set me free. I was so afraid to look at it, really look at it, and say some of those things out loud. And I even made a list, and I have that in the book. When I put those things out there and then just gave them to God and said, okay, so what if this does happen? What then? And what I clearly sensed from him was, well, he would be with me. And that was really all I needed to know. He would be with me. He would help me. I love the verse, Isaiah 41:10, "Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." And I clung to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there was a point in time where you did have to kind of let Renee go, wasn't there?
Yes, yes. She had come home from her first time in rehab and decided she wasn't done, which was horrifying to us because we knew done could mean dead, jail, institution. But yes, she had to let her go because we supported her recovery 100%. But if she chose to use, then that meant she was choosing to live somewhere else, and she understood that. And today she says that was the best and most loving thing that we ever did for her, to be set that boundary and be clear and follow through. But the fear then was just overwhelming. It wasn't easy because, again, like you said, we didn't know each day that call. And one of the things that we learned from Al-Anon, was a practical tool called using a God box. And I took a little box that I just happened to have around the house, put a little label on top that said, "My God Box," and put a little notepad and a pen nearby, And when I was aware of feeling anxious or worried, I thought about, okay, what is it? What am I worried about? And I wrote it down on a piece of paper, folded it up, put it in that box, and then I put the lid on it and put it up on a shelf. And that symbolized for me giving those things to God and putting them in his hands, because I had to surrender her and give her back to him into his care and just trust him. And it all came down to trust. Trusting him helped me cope with my fear.
Well, and Renee did get to the point where she was actually helping others with their pain and their mental illness as well, was she not?
Yes, she's done quite a bit of speaking. That became kind of draining because everybody wanted to hear her story over and over, which is very hard when you're trying to work on your recovery. And so then she transitioned to singing and began to write songs that shared her hope and her journey. And yes, that's been very powerful, very meaningful for her. The whole To Write Love in Her Arms aspect of our story has been just mind-boggling, but so purposeful and very, very rewarding.
Well, you write that sometimes parents tend to kind of fret over the past. They fret over the future as well, but neither of those lead to any sort of peace. What kind of encouragement can you give parents who are right in the middle of this battle right now?
Yes, well, I encourage them to cling to God, to nurture their faith, to surround themselves with a supportive community. They at least need a few friends that they can be real with and honest with, and any kind of support group, even if it's a Bible study, but a support group with others who understand is excellent, just key to my well-being. And then just simplifying their lives, just getting out of as many extra things as possible, because they need all their energy to just take care of themselves and focusing on their own self-care, their well-being, simple things like getting some exercise, adequate rest, eating healthy, and as silly as it sounds, making time for fun. We forget how to even laugh because we're so serious and sad all the time. So remembering what refreshes us and putting those things back into our schedule with God at the center, his word and prayer, and even if we don't know what to say or can't even think, just being in his presence, letting him love us and hold us, that is the key to getting through this without it destroying your spirit.
Well, and you write about how sometimes you do just want to isolate and stay to yourself and really stay away from people, even if it's friends and family members. And some of that might be due to maybe what people say that is hurtful. What can people say that would actually help and that would allow you to feel peaceful?
Well, actually, it's the same as if you were talking to someone who has just lost a loved one. They're grieving a death, because we are grieving. We're grieving the death of our dreams and our hopes for our children. So it's really the same thing. Don't try and explain it. Don't tell them you're sure everything's going to be okay, because it might not. So it's very simply, I care. I'm so sorry. How can I pray for you? Yeah, I'm here for you. Call me if you need. It's really just listening well and saying you care. Very simple.
How is Renee doing now, Dina?
Well, I'm very happy to share with you that Renee is doing better than she probably has all of her adult life. She's thriving. She's taking care of herself physically, exercising regularly, eating healthy, nurturing her relationship with the Lord, really working on herself. And we've been reconnected and reconciliated, all of us, with her early on from the very beginning of her recovery, which we are very, very blessed with that. But we're very grateful that she is doing really well today.
And you have two other children as well. You don't write a lot about them and, you know, how they fit into the picture, but how is their relationship? And really, how would you encourage those who may have a brother or sister or sibling who's struggling with some mental health issues?
Yeah. Yes, she has an older brother, younger sister. Her brother wasn't around very much when the things really went bad. He was already away at school. So he was just very supportive but wasn't really in the picture. And her sister was incredibly supportive to Renee. Yes, I think the biggest thing is to, depending on their age, to try and help them understand what's going on as much as possible, to explain to them what you're dealing with, because helping them understand, they feel a little more apart rather than being left out. So that was a big help to her sister. And then her sister was involved, excuse me, in support groups as well. Well, I have a little cough here.
Oh, that's okay.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. Let me chat a little bit. So one of the... you had just mentioned one of the things that was so difficult with the family was that, everybody wants to kind of stay to themselves, but you do write that it's so important to find people who are going through what you're going through. And in fact, the title of your book, You Are Not Alone, and hope for the hurting parents of troubled kids. We just want to encourage anyone who's listening today. We do still have a couple of copies of Dina's book. We'd love to get that in your hands. You can give us a call at 877-933-2484. Dina, we just thank you so much for joining us today and are so grateful for you to tell your story so that other parents will know that they are not alone.
You're welcome. Thank you. It was wonderful to be with you, and I hope parents will connect with us through our website to receive more ongoing help.
Well, and we will have a link to Dina's website as well on our website at My Faith Radio. You can just go click on Connecting Faith, and we'll have all of that information there. Thanks again, Dina.
Thank you, Joe.
Since you felt peace in the valley you made, where you're not meant to be, where the shame flows, shadows on me. But don't you forget that you're headed to more. But you settle for less. Don't buy the lie. It's as good as it gets. The same feet that left you lost and alone are the very same feet that'll bring you back home. Where
back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us today. Well, a really tough subject today. Just, I think about my own kids, and you do so wish for them to do well in life and be well, and then the guilt and burden is overwhelming when they are not doing well. I can only imagine how difficult that is as a parent to watch your kid turn away, not only from the Lord, but from anything good in their life.
It's such a test of your faith, really, and just releasing them to God, everything that you talked about. How hard to do as a parent, and yet our hope is in God, and we do have to trust that He is at work, and the seeds that we plant as parents, seeds of faith, you know, in the mustard seed business, they will be watered, and the Holy Spirit can work in any circumstance to bring them back. So just encouragement for parents, again, if this is you, you're wondering where the hope is, God is with you, He knows your pain, and anything's possible. They can come back. The prodigal story happens all the time, every day. So don't lose that hope.
Mm-hmm. Really makes you think about how the father runs to meet his child. It wouldn't matter what your child had done or where they'd been. You're going to run, just like God runs to us.
Right. And to not be afraid to face our biggest fears and to know that when we do, and a big fear is even reaching out to share what's really going on in our families, and to just know that God put us all here to build each other up, and so we can be completely honest, and the person across the room could be having had dealt with that same issue, but they can point us back to the truth and remind us that there is hope.
And she didn't talk a lot about it, but she wrote quite a bit about, you know, what is helpful when you know someone is going through something difficult. And she wrote about some things that aren't helpful and what we tend to say. And I think sometimes we don't know what to say. And so we say things that are not helpful at all. But she just said, if you just say you're sorry. Mm-hmm. And how can I pray for you, and to give a hug and to say something, but just I'm sorry seems to be the best thing.
Yeah, nothing wrong with apologizing. It feels like you're condoning their behavior then in some ways, but you're not. You can reiterate that even in your apology. Mm-hmm. You say, look, I disagree with the choices you've made, but I will always love you. Mm-hmm. And I am sorry for the way this has gone down. So, yeah.
Moral parenting is so tough. Well, we are going to hear from another person who also, this was from a prodigal. His name is Andrew Palau. Neil had a conversation back in 2012 with Andrew Palau. He's the son, of course, of Luis Palau, and he was a prodigal son as well. He shares about his journey, about overcoming shame, and finding exactly what Dina was talking about, finding God's grace.
Andrew Palau is now an evangelist, just like his father, Luis Palau. But for 27 years of his life, he walked his own way, far from God. He tells a story in the new book, The Secret Life of a Fool, One Man's Raw Journey from Shame to Grace. He talks about living in shame.
The guilt begins to mount up, and there's this sort of this downward spiral that you get into, and it just it's hard to get out of it. And alcohol became a real trap for me. I began to abuse alcohol in particular to escape the reality of that shame and guilt. I could never go to bed sober at night because I found myself in that position, if I ever did, sober in the dark with my thoughts. My mind would just race with all the guilt and the shame of my life and the people's faces that I had heard would haunt me. And I hated that position so much that I avoided it by partying every night of the week or just drinking by myself till I passed out. And yeah, it's quite a trap, hard to remedy.
You know, shame's not a word that maybe we like to use much today. How would you define shame?
Yeah. Well, I really have been thinking about this for many years, and one of the things I've always thought, even from the beginning, once I confessed Christ and received forgiveness, I realized, you know, that shame and that sense of shame really was a tremendous gift of God to me all those years. And you say, well, that's definitely not a very popular idea. If you listen to the talk shows today, all they talk about is, you know, you shouldn't feel ashamed. Don't let anybody make you feel ashamed. You got to just pull yourself up and rise above that and put it behind you. But, you know, we don't have the capacity to rid ourselves of the shame. There's a great saying that Rudyard Kipling said this, nothing is ever settled until it is settled right. And that's the fact of the matter. You can hide it, avoid it, stuff it. I hid from it through alcohol, but you really can't deal with it in and of yourself. It's really something that that God has offered a solution to, and that's what you have to finally get to. So I look at shame and guilt as a beautiful gift of God, allowing us to recognize that there is a problem, and it's real, and you feel that reality just pressing down on you, that there's a penalty to be paid, you know? For all of this garbage in my life, the shoe's going to drop. And, you know, I used to play a lot of games. I went to university, and I had a lot of a lot of philosophical arguments that I worked around to try to avoid all that. But man, when I was in my bed sober, it all came back, and all of it was useless at that point. And you know, the issues of eternity as well. You know, the idea, the reality of heaven and hell pressed down upon me, which is no surprise because the Bible also says, you know, I've written eternity on the hearts of all people. So no matter what people say about, you know, I would have said back then, oh, these things are unknowable related to eternity. They're beyond the mind of man, you know. But when I was sober in my bed at night, haunted with all the realities of my life, I knew exactly what my situation was, and I knew I was in a desperate spot. And the verse that I think summarizes a lot of this is just the simple passage where the Lord says, you know, all of us, all we like sheep, have gone astray, each one to their own way. And that's in the book of Isaiah 53. All we like sheep have gone astray, each one to our own way. And that's the problem. So, but God never leaves us with just the problem. He always delivers the solution. That verse goes on to say, all we like sheep have gone astray, each to their own way, but God laid on Jesus the sins of us all. And he offers that gift. And that's the question is, you know, how are you going to respond to it? I had that gift really well up inside me, land on my lap at camp a number of times. We talked about this time at this thing called Urbana, a Bible teaching conference, where I knew God was calling me, and I had the opportunity to respond, and I just rejected it over and over. But that gift is available. God is not far from you. He's near to you, and he's calling you. And if you're honest and you're willing, like you said earlier, Neil, for any of you out there kind of struggling this through, I just say, just let today be your day. My day was in 1993, but this could be your day as good as any.
Such an encouraging message of hope from Andrew Palau and also from Dina Yeo, that there is hope for hurting parents, for those who are struggling with addiction, and of course, hope through Jesus Christ. We have another really great just little minute to just encourage you today from Diane Patterson. She's talking about how you can be a light no matter where you are to those who are listening.
For Diane Patterson, working at the top of several Fortune 500 companies has given her the platform to be a light for Christ in some very unique ways. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas for Making Your Life Count, and Diane explains.
I feel so blessed because there were not very many women that were in those positions.
Diane had a way to make people comfortable about discussing faith.
Even just recently, a woman came to me and said, I'm going to be going through a divorce. And I actually just wrote her a note and shared with her that I've been praying for her every day and that she was especially on my heart these last few days. And it is wonderful to have that platform to be able to reach people that you wouldn't reach if you didn't have that opportunity.
God has strategically placed you where you are to be a light for him. So take notice of the everyday opportunities you have to share him with the people he places in your path.
You know, it's funny. I think we don't often think about that, but I was just, as I was listening to that, thought about working overnights at a weather station many, many years ago. And I just hated that job so much because I was exhausted all the time, mm-hmm. sleeping under the desk, you know, mm-hmm. watching weather. And but there was a colleague there who always came in when he got in early in the morning, also about 4:45, and just had a little chat. And eventually those little chats made their way to spiritual conversations. Mm-hmm. And I just began to believe, well, God has placed me here for maybe it's just this one reason. I'm going to put up with this job that's difficult so that I can talk about him. And what a great opportunity to have conversations about Christ and what he does in our lives. We just don't think about it very
often.
That's
right. Yeah, the saying goes, you might be the only Bible a person reads. Mm-hmm. So go out there and let your light shine.
All right, so make your life count. I hope you've just enjoyed our conversation today with Dina Yeo. You are not alone. Just talking about parents who are hurting. We've also talked about kids who are hurting and the difference we can make in their lives. So go out and make a difference today. Thanks so much for listening to Connecting Faith. We hope to see you tomorrow.